about 3 months back. Over 100 people walked out of their small community in the Central Australian scrub and refused to go back. They said they'd waited 2 years for improvements to happen under the federal government's intervention, the so-called Northern Territory Emergency Response, which they'd initially supported. Instead, their community had deteriorated, and when the sewage system collapsed and overflowed, they'd had enough. Since then, they've been living in a hodgepodge of tents and lean-tos and abandoned cars as a protest at what they say is a lack of any improvement or consultation about the restrictions placed on them by the intervention. They wrote to Minister Macklin asking about the promised emergency housing, which is made clear they can't expect. They've even written to the UN seeking refugee status, so they won't go back until their complaints are recognised. Now, to that end, a spokesman for the community, Richard Downes, is visiting the Southern Capitals to tell the story. And Richard's sitting here with me in the Sydney studio. Richard, welcome. And the first thing you've got to do is teach me how to pronounce the community correctly.
Umblatwich.
Say it again.
Umblatwich.
Umblatwich.
Yeah, Umblatwich.
Where's the community exactly? And describe the country for us.
Look, it's 350 kilometres northeast from Alice Springs on the Sandover Highway, heading towards Lacnass, Queensland border.
What's it like?
Look, it's at the moment, you know, it definitely a disgrace. With we haven't seen any positive results under the NTR measures, and definitely sort of let go. And that's why we, you know, when we saw the sewage, raw sewage,
bubbling out,
and the kids playing it, and even with the GBM based there.
Even with the
general business manager,
right,
based there, and yeah, I really don't know what he's doing. Even though there's no inspections carried out, nothing, you know.
Richard, is this your country?
It is, Philip. Yeah, I was born. In that area, not in that particular community, but in that area, out in the bush.
And I understand that's literally the case. There were no hospitals, no doctors, just out in the bush, your grandmother and your mum.
That's it, just out in the bush. We had no vehicles, no hospitals, no emergency, nothing, you know, just a natural birth.
Is that your grandmother who's 100?
She is.
100 years old.
Yep, and... And funny thing is, her mind's still sharp, very clear, you know?
Amazing. How different was it when you were a kid growing up? I guess, what are you? You're early 50s, are you?
Mid-50s.
Yeah, okay, not a bad guess. What was it like? What was it like then?
When you're growing up, you know, everything seems so exciting and new and strange and... And the freedom, and because we didn't have any schools, nothing at all. You know, there's schools were unheard of. So it was just involved the hunter-gatherer lifestyle, you know. We had no vehicles, so everywhere we walked, we'd cover anything from 200 to 300, 400 K.
When you say we, what size, how many people in the community? I know it would go up and down a bit.
Yeah,
but,
growing up, early nomadic lifestyle, then it might be just a family group of, say, 5 to 10 to 12, you know? Yeah. Then there'd be a meeting, a place where then you'd see 200, 300 people get together. Yeah.
Gosh, you've seen a lot of changes for good and bad, haven't you, in your lifetime?
It has.
You know? Now, I understand you were away in Western Australia where you were working in the transport industry. You've been a manager of depots. You've driven those huge road trains. So you've been out and about in the big wide world for quite a while, but they asked you to come back.
Definitely, Philip, because the main thing is on my mother's side, I'm one of the bosses, what do we say, Kudungulu, for our country, and so part of that leadership group and owners. And with my experience with English and a bit of understanding of the Western ways and the values and that. And also they don't, they pick you for, are you wise? Do you have the wisdom? And, can you engage with all people at all levels, and how do you respond?
I don't think you'd find that at all difficult, and I should add to that that you have another attribute, and that is you're built like a brick dunny. You're a big bloke, aren't you? I'm coming through a door, people would notice. But that'd help.
It helps, but also it helps, you know, when you got all the skills and people, the way you were brought up, you know, to respect and be honest and so on, be truthful.
But it looks like people haven't been honest and truthful to you and your mob. So let's look at this. Mm-hmm. When the intervention came, there was a fair degree of support for it, wasn't there?
There was, Philip. There was, you know, even from myself and Goloroi Yunupingu.
Yeah.
Because we said, okay, fantastic, because over the last 20, 30 years, we've been sending submissions and telling the governments, look, we need more funding to help us, and hasn't happened. So then this time we thought, okay, we'll watch for the first 12 months and see what happens, you know. And then after the first 12 months, and there was a review carried out, a 208 review by Peter Yu, then a year later, we said nothing, you know, we've got no voice.
So with Goloroi and Peter, friends and influential friends like this, you would have expected a different response.
I would have, you know, yeah.
Did the community have a lot of crime and behaviour problems prior to the intervention?
No, Philip, no. We're one of the, you find a lot of remote communities that the family network is close and very strong, even play some of the, you know, still carry out the traditional laws and ways. So we don't have all the problems that you get in towns where there's alcohol, drugs and petrol sniffing and abuse and that sort of thing. We don't have any of that at all.
So your problem really was infrastructure, housing and infrastructure.
Housing and infrastructure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the elder sat back for the first year waiting for the consultation, waiting for the good things to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the second year of the intervention, they realised nothing was happening and there was no engagement.
No engagement, Philip, you know, and we tried to engage with the, since it's begun, with the GBM to say, to advise him, this is the way it's got to be done. You need to have a meeting and consult with all the families and tell them the reason why the intervention measures are coming in, and we need to look at the ways we're going to go from here.
Now, we're talking about one of the so-called prescribed communities, which means the government acquires the community land leases, it implements so-called income management, where welfare payments are quarantined and set aside, and it set aside the elected Aboriginal Council in favour of an administration. By whom? Who took over the administration from the elected council?
Oh, look, well, it's supposed to be the federal government under the NTR measures, but also and then we had the Shire, the Barkly Shire, come in with the new Shire boundaries, because they ended up taking away all our office infrastructure and the buildings, the whole work. So we got nothing, no phone, nothing.
So you had bugger all, and suddenly you had even less than bugger all.
We had less. Yeah. We had less. And before that, Philip, we were able to sort of manage repairs and maintenance, carry out employment, carry out training, and do all that on the community ourselves. But since the NTR measures and the Barkly Shires come up, it's gone backwards, nothing.
It's funny you and I are sitting here having this chat, because yesterday I was writing a column which remembers the walk-off from Wave Hill, for example, and yep. I guess you're talking about people, some of whom would vividly remember that, or Lake Nash.
Yes. Well, my traditional leader, our last of the traditional leaders, he's 87. He was also involved in the Lake Nash walk-off back in the early 40s before the Gurindji.
Yeah.
To stand up for wages and that, you know. And
see,
that,
people forget this, that he was, you know, from the middle of the 19th century until then, the whole pastoral industry seemed to be totally dependent on what was bloody close to slave labour.
Oh, look, he was involved with a lot of droving, opening up a lot of the countries right through to New South Wales, down the Birdsville Track to Maori, to South Australia, and then back, you know. And we treat
and
these
paid
people,
next to nothing.
Next, just flour, tea and sugar. And that's why they walked off Lake Nash years ago to get
in the 40s.
in the early 40s.
Yep. And of course, Wave Hill's what, middle 60s, middle
to late 60s. 60 to 68.
So yep. there's a memory there's in the community of these great events.
That's right. Then the other one, Philip, was 1942 in the Pilbara walk-off. That was the first one. Yeah.
And when these walk-offs happened, the nation was gobsmacked. No one knew how to react. How dare these cheeky black fellas stand up for themselves like
that's
this?
That's right. That's right. You know, yeah, they're getting everything. You know, what are they walking off for? What do they want? You know, yeah, all our people ever wanted was equal rights, and same as the
fair suck of the sauce bottle. Now, as a group, you wrote to Minister Macklin. Mm-hmm. What were you asking for?
Mainly for her to come out and visit with us, talk with us, so we can explain where things are at, the situation of the community, no engagement, and make her aware exactly what's happening. And then hopefully she might sort of have been enough compassion and understanding to be able to say to the GBM, look, you need to engage more.
And you wanted to point out to us, surely, that you weren't a dysfunctional community, that you had your act together.
That's right, Philip. You know, that's right. I mean, we've had the alcohol programs for the last 30 years. You know, we've had the
which you implemented yourselves.
Which we implemented ourselves. And we worked in with the Northern Territory Police to be able to manage all our young people and any problems.
So you had night patrols and all that stuff?
We had night patrols. Yindamu started up night patrols over 30 years ago. Also, we had our income management on a voluntary basis with Centrelink, with a lot of people for the last 30 years.
Okay, this is Ellen Nell on Radio National, and my guest is Richard Downes, a spokesman for the Umblatawatch community protest in the Northern Territory. I have to say, you haven't got a huge amount of publicity out of this. This hasn't been getting a lot of media attention.
No, Philip, no, because our Styx group have been fantastic. We've been having a lot of meetings and forums, and it's been fantastic to see the engagement, because people are hungry for information to find out exactly what's happening in the Northern Territory on the ground, but the media hasn't really been sort of flocking, you know.
What reaction did you get from Jenny Macklin?
What
reaction when you wrote to the minister?
We did receive a letter from her about 6 weeks later, and by then we'd sort of given up and really said didn't want to meet with her. It was just wishy-washy, nothing really. She said, I'm sending you my two plays, which was, two people. But it was part of that consultation team. So it was just a disguise to go through with us on the ticking boxes measure. Listen to our and talk about what was in our letter.
Okay.
Nothing at all.
Let me just go back to the community as it was when it was operating. I suspect the pattern would have been that youngsters would have left the community, gone down south or to Darwin, and then drifted back later in life.
This is under the measures for
No, this is in the good old days.
Oh, look, good old days. And no, there's some sort of go into town, then they'd come back. But majority of them stayed there because we had sort of visions and goals set where we wanted to take the community, the direction that we want to go, you know? So they were interested in involving in training and be a part of that way forward.
I raise that because when the kids do go away from country, from the community, they often get confused and troubled in the towns and then bring that back to the community. That wasn't an issue with you?
Look, that wasn't an issue with us because our tradition, the custom and the law is still very strong, you know, and we have close ties with the Northern Territory Police, so they got to respect that.
Okay, so what are the conditions the protest group is living in or living under, for 3 months now?
Nothing. You know, we do have to cart our own water in 20-litre containers or 200-litre drums. And it's living out in the open, just under the windbreaks and the trees and some tents and car bodies. That's about it, Philip, you know. But also we're raising donations so we can Singapore, because that's our permanent camp. We're going to stay there. That's
so you're not going to go back now?
Not the leaders, no. No, we're not going to go back. There's 40 of the leaders there.
40?
40 of the tradition. They're the custodians.
Wow. Yep. Yeah.
And they said, look, this is our country. We're going to stay here. We don't want to be any part of that.
Okay. Measures. What about Aboriginal leaders? Have you had support from them?
No, when you say that, eh? It's very quiet and disappointing. You know, we've got probably one of the greatest threats and issues that I see imposed on us, and I just don't see any leaders coming up to say. I mean, have they been bought off or they're scared? I'm not too sure.
Bought off or scared?
Yeah, I don't know. They just don't seem to be saying anything. So what are we saying now to the leaders? We have informed the leaders, the likes of Pearson's and a few of the other leaders. You are not our spokespeople. We are the leaders. We'll take control.
What about Galeroy?
Look, I don't know why, you know. Galeroy was one of the strong leaders, very vocal, but now
you haven't he's heard from quiet, him either. Well, look, I find this deeply troubling, and I thank you for your time, Richard. So you've given up your work. You're now totally devoted to this issue.
Totally devoted to this, and because on our talks, Philip, you know, on the forums, and we're saying, okay, you know, we do have conscience. We've got to live with this. Do we stand up against racism and discrimination policies that's imposed on the Indigenous people there? Because we are outcasts. We're not part of the Australian society, Philip, you know? Yeah, we don't have the human rights.
And on that, let that sentence ring in the air. Well, I thank you for coming in, Richard. Spokesman for, and I'll have a crack at it, Umbladawat community, the protest in Northern Territory. And if you go to our website, dear listener, you can see details of where Richard will be speaking over the coming week or so. And he's a lovely bloke, so go along and meet him. On our next, Bruce Shapiro, and I'll be talking to a spokesman for the government of Israel. Oh, and to a female poker champion. Catch you then.